What's going on, y'all? This is Cad Magnus, the propagandist. Today is Sunday, March 6th, and this is the Awakened Demagogue podcast. So, I've decided to do something a little different with my episodes, other than add a video component, which you can check out on my YouTube channel, Awakened Demagogue. I'm going to pull some oracles, either a rune or Egyptian cartouche or a Kabbalah card. I have some new decks coming in. A tarot deck that's gonna be really cool. I'm not really big on tarot, but I know like everyone is into tarot these days, so I'm gonna like accommodate you guys. And an Aboriginal oracle card deck. Those are still on the way. So today we're just gonna pull a rune or two, see what the energy is while we align and get ready for today's episode. I'm dropping runes. Okay, we're jumping out. Alright, that was smooth. All right, what we got? The blank rune. diving deep into the unknown already. We're just starting off right. What I get for the blank rune is just unknown. There's also a blank card in the Kabbalah deck. And what I really get from that is just diving into the unknown. Untapped potential, unlimited possibilities. Just the universe and the infinite is supporting you, me, this podcast, what we have going on. All right, I have the strength rune. So it's kind of like the strength card in the tarot. Strength rune is just about fortifying yourself, being able to persevere through anything. It's actually one of my favorite scriptures, Philippians 4:13. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. So that's a good rune. Let's pull another one. And this is the self rune. So strength in the self, and we're getting untapped potential, all right? So this is a really good way to start this podcast and this new chapter in this podcast. The infinite is behind me. It's supporting me. It's supporting you, all those watching and listening. This is, you know, we are aligned with the cosmic, with God, with the universe, however you want to address or acknowledge the higher power. And we're ready to turn over a new leaf and get things moving. So that's really positive. Another thing that I want to add to the podcast is just a moment for personal alignment and reflection. And I want to do this because I've spent a lot of time observing the public conversation, right, on social media, and seeing how people are just expressing themselves, how they're responding to the Ukraine crisis, how we're all preparing for World War III, because let's be honest, if you know anything about history, this is how world wars start. There's always some tit for tat, micro spat between two European countries, and then the next thing you know, the entire world is at war because Europe just has to be extra for no fucking reason. And for me, it's interesting to see how the public consciousness has shifted around this current crisis, how people are hyper aware, like everyone's at the point where it's like enough is enough. We are tired of the war, we're tired of the conflict, we're tired of the oligarchs and the aristocrats and the elites going back and forth at each other for God knows what fucking reason, and dragging us all into it and killing us in droves and millions. I mean, I just read today that Putin's regime has arrested 3,000 Russian protesters, anti-war protesters. And I'm like, this is giving Lenin, Stalin, this is giving Mao, right? Historically, major communist regimes, one of the highlights of their, I guess I could say their reign, if you will, is mass extermination, mass arrests, people being placed in concentration camps. And America is not above that. You know, we have our history of locking up what we used to call the Japs or the Japanese in concentration camps. You know, every European governed or conquered or ruled country has its history with that. And of course, China. I don't know. I guess it's just a thing for people in power, for rulers, right? You know, right thinking, you know, in the East, they focus on right thinking and right action. And if you're not thinking the way the government wants you to think, if you're not acting the way the government wants you to act, lock them up and throw away a key, right? just, you know, if you're in the Nazi regime, you know, gas them, get rid of all of them. And for some reason, that's like a consistent theme, right? And it doesn't matter, honestly, it doesn't matter if it's like a democratic government or autocratic government. That's the thing. If you don't assimilate and fall in line with the regime and that's their expectations, I'd like you guys to see my tweet deck feed in the background, then there are severe consequences, right? Now, this goes back to the original law, the code of Hammurabi, you know what I'm saying? You have to bring order out of chaos. So we have a set of laws that people need to abide by, and there are harsh and severe punishments if you step out of line. Now, the idea and the intent behind that is to actually just keep order, you know, just try to keep away from this gross anarchy, because let's face it, we are mammals, we are animals, may have the highest level of consciousness as far as self-awareness and ability to manipulate matter and tools, but we're still animals, right? And left to our own devices, there's going to be even more rape and murder and God knows what than what we even see today with governments and law enforcement and militaries and so on and so forth. So as we move forward and we see various governments and regimes figure out the best way to maintain order within their borders, whether it's a theocratic system like we see in the UAE and the Arabic states, or we see a hybrid theocratic democracy like in Israel, we see a full-on atheistic right thinking, right action with a higher mind or will following the will of heaven like we see in China and the East, or whatever the fuck they try to do in Russia. I don't really understand what they try to accomplish in Russia. Like, I know when we go back to Peter the Great, right? Or Alexander the Great, I forget which one it is. They just wanted to be like France and Britain, right? And it's like, it's centuries ago during the Tsarist regimes, right? And today we still see that same energy of I want to sit at the big kids table from Russia, right? Like, Russia had a period where it tried to colonize some of the Americas. They tried their hand at carving out a little piece of California. They tried their hand at Hawaii. And unfortunately, while they were great at security, they weren't great at trade, right? So they never really, you know, carved out their little piece of America. If anything, America carved out their piece of Russia. And we now know that as Alaska. Purchased that, right? Because we're all about that money. We're about to ban something here, okay? In the West glory. But Russia has just been in this endless game of catch-up, right? Like, and I don't mean catch-up like tomato. I mean catch-up, like catching up to the big dogs, right? They want to sit at the big kids' table. They want to sit at the adults' table. They want to, you know, like, they have their seat at the UN Security Council because they have nuclear weapons, but they still want that actual piece of the pie, of the global pie. We have to understand that at one point, before liberation and the independence movements of various countries, Europe literally owned and colonized the entire planet. All but six countries, most of them in Southeast Asia, were conquered, or has been conquered by some European country, and Russia just really wants its piece of the pie. And they had the USSR, and historically, I mean, Russia is actually an extension of Ukraine if you really think about it, because if we go back into history of the Kievan Rus, the Rus regime and that family, that was actually the beginning of Russia. And Kiev is where? Ukraine, or at least modern day Ukraine. So Russia is actually an outgrowth, if you will, in modern terms. Russia is an outgrowth of Ukraine, right? So it's funny how Putin has this narrative of Ukraine belongs to Russia, where it's like, Russia kind of belongs to Ukraine, if you really think about it. Just saying, that's something to think about. And Russia only expanded the way that it did because it took advantage of the destabilization and the crumbling of the Mongolian Empire. So really, it's kind of like, you know, Putin is definitely doing some revisionist work here, right? He wants everyone to believe that it's Russia, and Russia has always been this great thing, and it's like, yeah, but it started in what we now call Ukraine, right? And I can go into the history of that, but I would rather recommend you guys look at the Ancient Rus series on YouTube by Kings and Generals. That is actually a YouTube channel that I use a lot to do my research. They're really, really good. They do very thorough and accurate historical research. They have lots of sponsors, which means if they're going to keep their sponsors, they have to keep their information accurate. Kings and Generals on YouTube, they're one of my faves. Definitely go check them out, right? Because they get into all of the things and the details that I don't want to bother with right now. But what I will say is, from a personal perspective and aligning with the people and the public at large, these are extraordinary times that we're living through right now. And yes, the public at large is sick of war, but unfortunately, like, my master's degree is in international relations, so I actually understand the cyclical nature of war and peace and freedom, or the lack thereof. And for the elites, for the ruling parties of the world, for our various governments, whether they're autocratic, theocratic, democratic, this is par for the course. This is business as usual. And what we can really, I don't know if we can take comfort in knowing that, but I mean, if from the mystical perspective, we can take comfort in knowing that this is just another cycle of life and existence and governance. There will never really be a perpetual peace, because we cannot fully understand and appreciate peace without war or some kind of chaos. Like, we can't appreciate order if there's no chaos. We can't appreciate peace if there's no war. And that kind of undergirds why the international system tends to just kind of let things happen. Unfortunately, we do have that racial aspect. This is a Eurocentric world order. Again, the entire planet was ruled, governed, and or colonized by Europe in all but 6 countries. Most of those countries being Southeast Asia, the ones that survived, the ones that have not been tainted by European whatever the fuck. And from the higher perspective, we have to understand that these Europeans, when they invaded countries and erased cultures and languages and religions, they took all of those secrets and kept it for themselves. And they're repackaging it and selling it back to us, selling it back to the people. And we, the people, are rediscovering ourselves and taking pride in that. Like, I am learning about my Native American heritage and getting into that. And while I appreciate the scriptures, I do consider myself like a Judeo-Christian mystic, and that allows me to synthesize the cultural and spiritual part of my being that naturally expresses itself with my appreciation of the scriptures and organized religion. And then this Eurocentric world order that has basically tried to it's basically whitewashed everything that we know about humanity and culture. We also see how the narrative plays out racially, right? Like, understanding the balance of war and peace. And, it's very unfortunate that Europeans just allow the plight of those in the Middle East and throughout Africa and their wars. Rwanda is a very good, glaring example that we even learn about. I spent a whole module on that during my grad school program in international relations. It was the bystander effect of European countries being horrified at watching the Hutus use radio broadcasts to demonize and dehumanize the Tutsis, to where we actually witness black-on-black genocide, if you will. And Europeans understand the cycles of life and war and peace, and yeah, they felt bad, but they didn't want to send their precious white people to go fight and break up the black-on-black fight. And from a cosmic perspective, like I say, we can't appreciate peace without war. Like, how can we understand that the bystander effect is wrong if no one ever just stands by and shows themselves to be a glaring high-level example of what happened on a train in Pennsylvania where a woman was raped on a subway and no one did anything, and the DA just comes out and says, oh, well, they're good people, they didn't mean it. Oh, they thought maybe it would stop. I don't even, like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, whatever the fuck his reasoning was. But at the end of the day, when we look at understanding war and peace, well, let the colors have their war and the white people have their peace. And then if you look at the yin-yang symbol, we have the white and the black and the symbolic of light and dark, and how you have a seed of one within the other, and then there's this universal balance. And unfortunately, that's kind of like high-level spiritual bypassing, you know, well, we have to let them kill each other because we can't know peace without war. But oh my God, if we go to war, that's not okay because we're supposed to be white, light, and peace. But it's okay if the coloreds and the darkies and the black ones, if they go to war and they represent darkness and destruction, because we have to know that so that we can be the counterbalance of white, light, and peace. That is actually how these sick and demented white folks, these Europeans, view the world and think of themselves as like some kind of pseudo-savior. I don't know, I don't get it. And when I watch the social conversation, there's, you know, the masses, whether they realize it or not, are fully in participating in this and cheering it on. Yes, we have to help Ukraine, we have to save Ukraine. I have never seen so much of an outpouring of support and get the bad guy. Like, yeah, there are those who are upset about Israel illegally invading and occupying parts of Palestine. But the difference in energy from the collective in trying to defend Ukraine is absolutely crazy. And we can't solely blame that on the powers that be, right? Because they may set the agenda, but they only successfully set these agendas based on what the collective consciousness responds to in a positive and or negative way. When we talk about the media and public relations, it's not solely, you know, the conspiracy theorists who go crazy about it. It's not solely about someone saying, okay, this is what you guys are going to think today. And this is, you know, like Cardi B said, you know, it's not just the raunchy music that she puts out. It's the fact that you guys eat it up. You guys create the demand for it. Like when we talk about sex workers on TikTok, you know, they talk about the fact that men create this demand for it. And guess what? It's a great way to make quick money, and in the right place, it's absolutely fucking legal. And when women have nowhere to turn, I mean, I'm guilty of it too. I've had my time with sex work. And just like any other stripper or escort or whatever, when times get hard while I'm changing my life, the first thing I think about is, what man can I sleep with or manipulate? How do I, you know, like, it's really, or do I need to go to the strip club? Like, it's very hard to not try to be a supplier when you're in survival mode and you know there's a demand. And governments are like this. Media outlets, influencers, rappers, artists, we're all like this. We know there's a demand for a certain narrative. We know there's a demand for a certain kind of content. So we get up and we deliver, because guess what? The bills gotta be paid, or power needs to be maintained, or whatever it is that the creator or the ruler or the leader is trying to achieve or maintain for him or herself, him or herself. There's a demand, right? There is some demand for it, whether a content, a narrative, you know. Alex Jones does great, Trump does great, because there is a demand for the narrative that those individuals push, right? They do great because there is a demand. There are rabid racists out there, there are delusional conspiracy theorists out there that want to eat this content up. There are disgruntled veterans who only know combat and are barely fucking surviving in this delusion of a civilian world, because that's all they know, and they need some kind of content to make them feel like they're still in the fight. So we have Trump, Alex Jones, David Icke, whoever the fuck, whoever else out there. Then we got the New Agers who were capitalizing on it, you know, and preying on the traumas of the people. That, you know, they're all working together to deliver, to supply this content for this demand, right? There is a demand for a narrative. There is a demand for letting the white people feel like they're the heroes, right? And that comes from the lie of white supremacy that led to the colonization of the entire planet. You know, white is light and it's good, and they are the saviors. They are the heroes, the white Jesuses of the world, the teal swans who are out here with all the wisdom and curing everybody of whatever the heck it is they think they need curing from. They're the ones that have it because they're white, so they must know better, right? There's a demand for that narrative. So there are those characters, there's governments, these politicians that deliver, that supply these narratives, that supply these thought processes to satiate the needs of the people who are demanding, like, please tell me a fairy tale about someone looking like me being fucking amazing if they're not. And now we have black people, Native American and Hispanic, going out of their way to deliver those narratives, those hero story narratives, those, you know, black girl magic narratives. They're supplying those narratives for the demand of the people who need to believe in themselves again, to see that this is a point in time where everyone can eat, especially with the rise of the metaverse and cryptocurrency. This is game time for everyone. It doesn't matter what you look like, what your interests are, whether you're a jock and a cheerleader or a nerd and a geek and a gamer, there is room for everybody to eat. And I think that is a beautiful state of consciousness. I think that's a beautiful place for everyone to be right now. And yeah, we have a lot of chaos and turmoil in the world. The only thing I can halfway support about the current narrative of Ukraine being the number one issue is that Russia is a nuclear state and Putin's a little off his rocker and he's ready to drop some nukes. And, you know, nuclear war is kind of important. So, I mean, I understand the prioritization of this story, of this narrative, and what's going on in the world right now. But when we think about the Department of Homeland Security shielding Ukrainians from deportation, well, of course they're doing that because if you send them to Ukraine, you're sending them to a war, into a war zone, potentially to their deaths. My issue with that is, why can't we protect Central Americans, Haitians, and South Americans that literally face an equal guaranteed death when you deport them back? Right? That's a big issue with the whole immigration debate. When we deport Central South Americans or Haitians, when we send them back to their countries, we send them back to the same risk and guaranteed homelessness, certain death, right? We send them back into their own war zones. Happy to send color, people of color to die, but no, we have to protect the Ukrainians, right? We have to protect the what? The white people. Only the white, only the Europeans who face political persecution or just the risk of actual certain death, right? And let's not act like there isn't a political aspect to the gang wars and the drug trade that pollutes and taints life in Central and South America, because there absolutely is, whether it's, you know, the Snowfall CIA narrative, or, you know, our involvement in it, or the modern day reality of a mayor being elected to office in a Mexican city and surviving 13 assassination attempts because she ran for office, got into office, and just wanted to make a change to make the streets and the neighborhoods in her town safer. And this is a real life female mayor that I actually saw speak at a UN reception in 2019. She survived 13 assassination attempts because she got involved in politics and became mayor of a town so she can crack down on the drug trade and gang violence to create a safer and more prosperous locale for her fellow Mexican people. Right? This is real. That is an absolute political reality, right? But we're more than happy to send Mexicans and Central and South Americans to their deaths, right, to their little mini war zones and their deaths. We're more than happy to send Haitians back to, I mean, they just had their president assassinated, and they suffered, like, what, two severe earthquakes since then? Yeah, send them back to sudden death, but please, protect the white people. We have to protect the Ukrainians. We have to protect the white ones. We have to. And this is, as NPR put it, this is the humanitarian issue, right? Because when we talk about humanitarianism, people think humanitarian means caring about humanity and doing good things and philanthropy. But in the professional realm, in the international relations realm, in my profession, humanitarianism is about war. International humanitarian law is the law of war. Humanitarianism is how war impacts humanity, right? Refugee crises, so on and so forth, you know, mass migration, you know, a million people fleeing Ukraine, record numbers. That's that's the real story and meaning behind the term humanitarian, right? It's about how war affects humanity, the innocents, civilians. And this is a big issue, because why are we still to this day in 2022 picking and choosing which humans are worthy of protection, are worthy of being shielded from being deported back into a war zone where they face sudden and imminent, absolute guaranteed death? Oh, save the Ukrainians from being killed by Russian soldiers, but don't save Central and South Americans from being killed by the gangs that absolutely will off them simply for fucking leaving the block. Got a long way to go. And we have this pseudo-progressive administration positioning itself as we are a light and a beacon of leadership. We're going to bring order back, and this is how democracy works. But Joe Biden is absolutely showing us that same man who voted against busing when Kamala Harris was that little girl getting on that bus. He is absolutely showing us who he is. And America is showing the world who we are. At least in the mainstream consciousness. In the mainstream Eurocentric consciousness. We are showing the world who we are, absolutely. An interesting thing that came up the other day on Twitter was Lindsey Graham's calling for the assassination of Putin. Russians, get out there and off Putin. And the public response was absolutely, it was a little scary. Oh my God, you can't say that, you can't say that, you can't say that. Well, what the fuck else is he supposed to say? Oh yes, Putin, what a wonderful guy. No, you can't say that. Well, what do y'all want him to do? This is war, right? Like, get it together, people. War is kill or be killed. At some point, somebody's gonna fucking die. You guys are ready to cheer on a war and then say, well, no, not like that. Well, what did you think war was? World War I and World War II were not, these are not mythological story time moments. These things really happened. People really died. And just because you in particular are alive today does not mean that other people aren't going to die or that wars won't happen. Right? We're so, like, and social media, it's like, it's crazy. Like, people think, oh, well, war happened back then, but because I had a peaceful 20 years, you know, no more war. What do you mean? There's wars going on right now. America's been at war in Afghanistan and Iraq for 20 years. War is war. Because the news isn't hyping up what's going on in the Middle East the way it's hyping up what's going on in Ukraine. Suddenly war doesn't exist or something. How do you think any governor, any president, any government leader, political leader felt about Hitler, about Mao, about Stalin? Okay, guess what? Somebody had to say, take that guy out. He's in the way. He's causing trouble. We're trying to make progress, and here he fucking go. This is the reality of war. This is the reality of international relations. This is reality. Get it together, people. You just don't understand the reality of what, and I understand truth is stranger than fiction, and oftentimes it's more painful, right? Absolutely more painful, because you're living through it, right? So it's like, fuck, this can't be happening. Make it end, make it stop, please. That's not how war works. Okay? If someone breaks into your house and you say, just please leave, they might actually just shoot you because you annoyed them while they're trying to take your shit. Like, get it together, people. Like, I don't understand this world of pansies that we've created. Like, just because we all want peace and we're working towards peace, that doesn't mean we shouldn't be ready to fight when it comes down to it. That doesn't mean don't be ready to defend yourself if absolutely necessary. I mean, get to know your laws and how to spin the story and your situation to where you can get away with murder, because you might have to claim self-defense. There may come a day where you have to claim self-defense. And a war does not have to be declared. A country doesn't have to invade another for you to know that it's better to be a warrior in a garden than a gardener in a war. Absolutely. I don't understand what people are thinking or why they're thinking these things. But this is just how it works, guys. This is what it's like to live through the fall of an empire also. Because the naivety and the decadence that we see just being completely pervasive through Western consciousness right now, it's slightly terrifying, but it is the hallmarks, the infighting, the instability. These are the hallmark signals of the end of an empire. And it's terrifying to see the West and the European Empire, the American Empire fall before our eyes in real time on TikTok and Twitter Live or wherever. But this is where we are now. And if we don't get our shit together as a people, we are the reason for our own demise. If we don't come to terms with the fact that sometimes, you know, knucking you buck is not just a song. I grew up in East Atlanta. We was knucking if you bucking because folks actually had to get out there and fight. Okay? I've had my share of bar fights, although it was up here in New York. I've had my share of bar fights. I've had to knuck if you buck and throw some hands too. Okay? Like, sometimes you gotta make it do what it do, right? So let's not be afraid of what we're facing right now, because we don't have to be afraid. There's nothing to be afraid of. This is the typical ebb and flow of life in the universe. War and peace. This is how innovation comes about. And that's what I want to get into in the next segment. Let's take a look at World War I, World War II, and what we are now facing as World War III in the making. What innovation can we bring about from this World War III? Now that we are all hyper-connected and the people, from the constructivist perspective, we actually have a real stake in this fight. We actually have a real role. We have a real opportunity to participate and actually make sure that we can be a part of the rewriting or the new writing of history. You know, the victors always write history, but now we don't have to deal with a revisionist history. We can actually make sure the truth is known. So let's take a look at these elements in the next segment. All right, guys. Y'all, round two. So in the last segment, I got into the details of what I have been observing on social media and the collective consciousness around what's going on in Ukraine and how it presents a new challenge for us to recognize the reality of how racism plays into what we are dealing with today in international relations and how we actually bring about this peace and equality that we think we want to see in the world going forward. So in this segment, I want to get into a little bit of international relations theory and help you guys understand what we in the professional IR realm are thinking, and what kind of innovation we can actually bring about in World War III. Again, there is an opportunity for us, we the people, the collective, not just here in America, but around the world, to take this lead in the constructivist way. And in international relations theory, constructivism is literally a focus on the public or non-state actors participating in war and social movements. How social movements contribute to shifts in the geopolitical framework and how the public at large contributes to global governance as a whole. When we look at liberalism, Biden and the left, that's what they focus on. The success of institutions, the United Nations, BRICS, the African Union, the European Union, how these institutions can help us maintain peace, facilitate war, and try to not have everyone get nuked. Realism believes that states are unitary actors, as in the United States, Russia, Ukraine, China, South America are all their own self-aware and self-conscious entities that are power-hungry at all times. And at all times, and there's always going to be this competition or the striving for power, for conquest. What's going on in Ukraine is very much a realist event. Putin wants power, he wants conquest, he wants Russian glory. So what he does is boom, invade, right? This is a very realist event, and sanctions are a liberal response. And what we see in social media and the public consciousness is the constructivist participation of the public at large to either wage war in a comprehensive and totalitarian way, not so much as in totalitarian governments, but total, like I'm using this term as in total, complete, and comprehensive. A total and complete way to just finally either end it or bring it forward or whatever it is the public is trying to do. I don't know, you need a few more leaders and influencers to kind of bring that together. But that's a different podcast. So today I want to look at the utopian opportunity that we face now with the Ukrainian situation and what is gearing up to be World War III. Again, world wars are not automatically declared on day one. It usually takes a few years of a minor conflict or local conflict somewhere in Europe, and then countries start asking for help from other countries, and then it escalates and it grows until all the countries are at war, busting guns, dropping bombs. And if, you know, Japan wants to feel froggy again, they could probably get nuked again. But since that happened in World War II, they can't even have a military because it's like, what, we don't want to do this again. Okay, so let's give it a little rundown. World War I, right? Now, we have to, let's just start here, right? The international system as we know it is an outgrowth of the idealism of United U.S. presidents, right? The United Nations itself, the public for some reason thinks it's like it's its own global independent entity based in Europe. Well, I don't know where y'all got that from. The United Nations and the international order as we know it today is an outgrowth of the idealism of U.S. presidents. America literally runs and governs the world, hence the title of hegemon being held by us. The actual proper U.N. headquarters is not in Geneva. It is in New York City. Okay? World War I. That was a shit show. Woodrow Wilson came up with his 14-point plan for peace, and those points included open diplomacy, freedom of the seas, removal of economic barriers, reduction of armaments, adjustment of colonial claims, a preservation of Belgian sovereignty, restoration of French territory, I got bad then, redrawing of the Italian frontier, a division of Austria-Hungary, a redrawing of the Balkan barriers or borders, what we're seeing be reworked out today, limits on Turkey, as in the end of the Ottoman Empire and making sure they don't start their shit again, an establishment of an independent Poland, hey guys, and the creation of an association of nations. Now, in Woodrow Wilson's time, that was known as the League of Nations. However, because nobody wanted to play nice, nobody wanted to contractually agree to not bomb each other or fuck each other up or invade each other, nobody wanted to be held accountable, right? Europe didn't want to grow up, right? So they said, nah, this sounds good, but nah, hard pass, right? So World War II, you know, enter Hitler, and just, you know, I think Hitler is fascinating because Hitler was really just a disgruntled World War I veteran who was hurt and distraught over watching his country be stripped of everything that it had to be proud of, be carved up by Britain, France, and the other great powers, and Britain, Germany actually had to foot the bill to pay back they had to pay back Britain and France for the costs incurred in fighting World War I. Germany got it bad at the end of World War I. Okay, that shit was like, damn! So Hitler was a little salty about that, you know? And then he was the typical, you know, the poor kid who wasn't really the most popular. So he probably joined the military to make himself a star. They suffered an ignominious loss. Then after that, he thought he would get into art. He was a failed artist. Nobody bought his art. He blamed his mom and his parents. He said, man, fuck this shit. Got into the occult world. Yes, he was a Rosicrucian. That was a fun discussion that I experienced in the lodge. Watching Fridays go back, was Hitler a Rosicrucian? And the person, the grand counselor, delivering the facilitating the discussion, gave the father such a look like, why the fuck would you even say that? Because it's true. Hitler was a Rosicrucian. He also got into the Thule Society. He was deep into occultism. He learned about the ancient Atlanteans and the extraterrestrial beings who were known for their blonde hairs and blue eyes. And for some reason, he thought that meant the Aryan race. But the actual Aryan race are the Indo-Europeans who did have light colored eyes and they were of fairer skin. But the Tolosians, the Atlanteans, the people that may or may not be from the Hollow Earth that had the blonde hair and the blue eyes, that's who he decided were the proper Aryan people, although they're not even entirely like our version of human. That's another podcast. And he said, you know what? Well, those are the chosen people. Those are the only people worth living. Kill everybody else. Now, mind you, Hitler didn't have blonde hair or blue eyes, but it was his mission to cleanse the earth. Gotta love that. I just think that's a fascinating story. Anyway, so, you know, that was going on. Russia was in trouble. Interesting tidbit. You want to know why no one has actually conquered Russia? Now, we see this whole Ukraine thing. There's a dog around here making noise, so if you hear that, whatever. I record this at home. But if you want to know why it's so interesting that for all that Russia can't accomplish, no one can really take Russia, it is because of the weather and terrain in Russia, okay? It's not so much that Russia has a stellar military. It's not like they're great war fighters as we see in Ukraine. They are, as usual, in typical quintessential Russian fashion, sloppy as fuck, not very coordinated, not very talented. They just have really cool toys. And the reason why Hitler or anybody or even Napoleon couldn't take Russia wasn't because Russians are great war fighters. It's because nobody can handle the weather and the terrain in fucking Russia. Okay, so shout out to Russia for being in the middle of fucking nowhere in the goddamn they endured the most severe cold weather in mountainous areas on the planet. Kudos to y'all. Your mountain save you every time. I think that's a fascinating tidbit. Okay, and then enter Japan, you know, wanting to feel froggy. All right, you know, they want a little piece of the action. Drop something on little Pearl Harbor. U.S. said, nah, bro, that's not how that works. And then, you know, and all this shit. And everybody, we're tired of fighting everybody's fucking wars. Leave us alone. What came out of that? The United Nations. FDR, Frederick Roosevelt, said, let's give it a go. Let's give Woodrow Wilson's idea another go because y'all are doing too much over there, right? And, like, we don't want parts. And since the whole of Europe was literally destroyed in World War II, they were like, you know, maybe we should try this whole peace thing out. You know, what was that? Y'all was talking about this association, this league or whatever. Maybe we should be united, you know, because we want to be like the United States anyway. Maybe we should be a United Nations because, like, you know, It got a little ugly. You know, my bad. We should have listened to y'all the first time. We're here now. Okay? And that was the outgrowth of World War II and the beginning of the United Nations system as we know it. This is a liberal institution to focus on handling territorial and interstate disputes through diplomacy rather than war and invasion. And it's worked to a point for some time. And here goes Russia saying, oh, what? Y'all let the Taliban take Afghanistan and y'all ain't do shit about it? Wait a minute. So that means that, you know, y'all's adversaries and y'all's enemies can just goddamn take territory and y'all ain't gonna nuck if you buck? What? Who said allow me? Okay, allow me, sir. Allow me. Y'all ain't gonna do shit about it. Let me find a motherfucker. Let me throw some motherfucker right there. NATO, don't join that. Psh, allow me, because y'all ain't gonna do shit. Here we go. Right? So much for the UN, okay? And again, the UN is an outgrowth of the ideals of US presidents. We're hoping to be able to lead the pathway towards peace and democracy. Because Europe is always extra for no fucking reason. And you know, Europe said, you know, listen, we'll try that out. You know, give it a go. Okay, we're going to have the Nuremberg trials and military tribunals where they tried 24 Nazi leaders, where three were acquitted, four were convicted for 10 to 20 years, three were given life in prison, and 12 were sentenced to death by hanging. Just good old fashioned, like, can y'all not kill everybody? Can we not do that, please? Thanks. Okay. The interesting thing about international law and the International Court of Justice, you know, we have the ICC doing its thing right now, launching an investigation into Putin for war crimes. Now, the beautiful justice that we perceive from the Nuremberg trials, that doesn't really exist as a standard today. That was a unique moment in time because, wow, Nazis were really fucking bad and we just had to do something about that. In modern times, if a war criminal is convicted, then they're just convicted and they get a bad rep and shame on you, you're a bad person, and then they're sent back to their country and their country, their home country, decides what to do with that person. And if that home country already has a corrupt government, more than likely nothing will happen to said war criminal other than being known as a war criminal. And this is why it's important to recognize that Lindsey Graham may have been tweeting what everybody was thinking about doing to Putin, but we have to understand that if Putin is actually convicted of war crimes, nothing's gonna happen to him but being sent back to Russia, and maybe they'll do something about it, maybe they won't, but it's up to Russia. And if the only ones truly against Putin are the civilians who are being arrested and locked up by the thousands, and as history dictates, it will soon be by the millions, then Putin will just be a pariah and he's going to continue with business as usual. It's going to be the same purely symbolic shit that our idealist presidents in the United States orchestrated out of World War I and World War II. So what is the great opportunity for what is slowly becoming World War III? Like, let's just settle into this reality, right? Like, this is how world wars start, right? World wars don't, they don't happen, they aren't 6-day wars or 2-week wars. World wars take years, right? So let's just settle in, right? Like, it could take a year or two just to declare a proper and official world war, right? Like, all of these sanctions and all of this uproar and the public narrative is to hopefully prevent the full escalation into World War III. But anyone in our circle, in the pros, we know, well, this is how world wars start. Let's just do what we can to prevent this from getting there, but also settle into the fact that this is where we're going and the opportunities that lay before us with this new shit show. So, G.H.W. Bush, the senior, okay? Conspiracy theorists love playing his clip where he said, "This is a new opportunity for a great idea. A new world order." I agree. It is. For example, let's revamp international law. Make it real. Because we have this international justice system, we have the UN, we have this international, you know, global governance system and setup. However, it's limited in its legitimacy. And I say that as to say that, yes, the public in various countries are all agreeing to the global social contract of abiding by the UN Charter and the UN Declaration of Human Rights, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and international law, international humanitarian law in particular, which, by the way, there are no rules of engagement or laws for space, cyber, or information operations, which is why Russia and China are having a fucking field day with those domains, because there literally are no laws governing those domains, so they can do whatever they want, and honestly, literally no one, there's nothing that can or will be done about it, because there are no laws in place for that. Anyway, international law and the international system are really just to keep people from blowing each other up, keep countries from blowing each other up, and hopefully nuking each other. It's really about hot warfare and conventional warfare. All this fun technical psyop stuff, they don't really care so much about that. Those are victimless crimes, if you will. So it's like, I mean, you might mind fuck a couple of people, but people aren't dying, and, you know, we aren't using children as bombs and stuff. So it's like, you know, it's not bad. It's not that bad. They want to keep playing the game. They just want to do it in a way to where they don't get their heads cut off, because we, the people in the public, are getting tired of our family members being killed. It's a really sinister thing, but, you know, it's not about this devil or this satanic energy that the conspiracy theorists talk about. This is really just human nature at play. This is just the failings, the vicissitudes of life, and the vices of human nature. Like, it's just the dark side of human nature. So when we look at the international justice system, what we can really see come out of this coming, hopefully last, global conflict is a real codification of international law and an establishment of an international prison. Like, can we resurrect G-Bay, you know what I mean, and actually have it for terrorists and war criminals? Because guess what, unless they can be sent, like, how many people don't rob? Like, I know there, I'm a person where I have a temper of zero to death very quickly, right? Have you guys seen that TikTok? If you haven't, scroll, you'll find it. And the reason that I don't go around putting people in the dirt is because I don't want to go to prison, right? I like my freedom, right? There's nothing to stop war criminals if they know that they're going to be able to maintain their freedom. Yeah, they may get a rad rep, but who really gives a shit about that, right? Those are words. Those are purely symbolic platitudes to satiate the public so that they don't get rowdy and overtake governments and assassinate people in Nicholas III style. So, Bolsheviks, yeah, we don't want that. So, I would like to see come out of this a revamping of G-Bay. Right? Like, I used to dream of an international criminal prison in somewhere in Siberia, but it's like, that's probably not very strategic at this point. I would say put it in Antarctica, but why would we give war criminals access to the most valuable potential for human discovery and advancement in the history of modern humanity? Nah. So, let's send them to G-Bay or, like, some other, like, is there some, like, random island off the coast of Australia, which was originally a British penal colony? Can we, like, revamp that, but not allow them to, like, get out and create their own governments and their own, like, savage ass country? Like, is there a way that we can really create an actual international justice system? Because the International Criminal Court, International Court of Justice, these are great institutions, and they let the public feel better about these guys in power that commit genocide and God knows what else. But if we're actually going to work towards peace, we need to make the system real, right? There need to be real consequences for those in power. The thing is, the United Nations and the international system is completely voluntary, and who the fuck is going to sign up to be put in the worst prison ever because they decided to, you know, take some territory and kill some folks? Like, who's going to sign up for that? Nobody. But this is the constructivist opportunity, right? We the people can use social media, can use our First Amendment, can use protests, can use the bravery of the Russian anti-war protesters to our advantage and say, we absolutely need a system of actual justice and punishment, because we are sick and tired of these wars. We're sick and tired of being exploited. We are sick and tired of being sick and tired. And if you're going to have this international system, if you're going to have this global government, then do it in a way to where you stop protecting yourselves maybe a little bit here or there, and actually hold yourselves as people in power accountable to the global body politic that you guys govern. Build a prison and throw the war criminals in there. Not just the demonized people of color that the Europeans don't like, but the Putins as well. You know what I mean? Do we always have to take them out, or can we just get them, you know, and lock them away and throw away the key? I would like to see that. I think that's very necessary, because without that, the international system continues to be a joke. And that is what Putin is showing right now, that the international system is a fucking joke. It's purely symbolic, it's all rhetoric, and no one at the highest levels of the global body politic, at the highest levels of society, no one's gonna fucking do anything, because it's all an agreement to put on a show to pacify the masses. And this is not a conspiracy theory. I have a master's degree in this. It is the truth is terrifying. Like, the truth actually gives Alex Jones and co. a run for their fucking money. Okay? The truth is absolutely horrific. But it's not about this spiritual war. Well, it is a spiritual war and stuff. But it's really about human nature at the highest levels of society. Ephesians 6:12, where we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against powers, principalities, and spiritual wickedness in high places. This isn't about some external Lucifer or Satan. This is about the human soul, human consciousness, and people making conscious choices to be fucking assholes and not be held accountable. This is what it's about. Innovation is to bring, the innovation that could come out of World War III is about bringing actual peace. You know what I'm saying? We have cryptocurrencies coming into the fore now. This new metaverse, and I mean, you know, video games kind of make me nauseous now. Like, I can't just sit here. Like, I was in the Somnium space the other day with a friend, and we were looking at the art exhibits, and, you know, arts and the spoils of war, that's definitely my thing. It's a bit much for me. I don't know if I really want to be fully immersed in a VR world, but I do love what is coming out of it, and I like the fact that cryptocurrencies and NFTs and this digital world and the metaverse are actually kind of taking center stage now. And we're seeing real innovation for how we do business and how we interact with each other. And it's actually be given legitimacy, right? Ukraine is raising billions of dollars in cryptocurrency. So when we talk about the Great Reset, does it really have to be this scary thing that the conspiracy community talks about? Oh my gosh, it's going to be a cashless society and they're going to own us and everything. Like, first of all, stop thinking that you have privacy, okay? I did a temporary work assignment at an outlet mall, Woodbury Commons, over the holidays. And I was working with a Chinese sales associate. I was a supervisor. And she was talking about how she uses WeChat to talk to some people in China, but she doesn't really rely on it because there's no privacy. And I put her on game like, well, you don't have any privacy here either. It's just that we don't bother you. That's the only difference between America and China. Don't think you have privacy anywhere. The difference is America is not going to bother you unless you're bothering America. China is going to bother you because that's, That's what authoritarian and totalitarian regimes do. They are going to bother you to make sure they absolutely control you, everything you think, say, do, whatever. That's how that works. Just throwing that out there. So yeah, social networks, changing the face of reporting. I've seen a lot of Ukrainians, whether they are immigrants here in America or they're just actually on the ground there in Ukraine, we're democratizing the news, right? People are actually keeping up with authoritative news sources, sharing their experiences, sharing the stories from their families and friends actually there on the ground. We don't have to rely on the mainstream media and the spin and the narrative that I am guilty of working in, because that's literally what I do as a professional. But we don't have to rely on the alphabet channels, right? We don't have to rely on what Professor Griff calls the alphabet boys. We're actually taking truth and narrative for ourselves as a people. And I absolutely love that. And this is the constructivist opportunity. This is the opportunity for the masses to fully participate in what is going on right now. And I know there are a lot of people who don't want to participate. They don't want to know what's going on. They want to turn the TV off. My mom was guilty of that. I think this stuff's fascinating. She always says she lived through Vietnam and Jim Crow. She didn't want to think about all that. And I get it, because it's very traumatizing to live through it. But we have one hell of an opportunity right now as a people to change the game. Right? We can actually collectively put so much pressure on our overlords, on our governors, on our governments, and say, this is what we want going forward. If you want our cooperation, understand that we have hacktivist groups that can take you down. We have these organizations online on Discord that will absolutely take you down. We will fight you. We are running our own PSYOP and counter-narrative, because we are sick of the lies and we want to know the truth and we want to get the truth out there. And I absolutely love that this is where we are here at this day and time amidst all this trauma and turmoil and drama. I'm absolutely amazed at it. So that's what, that, you know, what can really come out of this developing World War III. We hope it doesn't actually get to that point, but it's more than likely going to get to that point, because Putin is not going to stop. Like, you don't start this kind of an operation to be stopped easily, right? So let's just settle in and accept the fact that we are in this for the long haul. Putin already accepted it. He's saying it's going according to plan. It's just taking a little longer. I mean, like I said, no one launches an operation like this and gets themselves into this shit just to, one, just to stop with Ukraine, and two, just to be stopped easily, right? So let's settle in and adapt to what we're facing right now, and think about what we can create for ourselves going forward. Out of World War One, the United States proposed the League of Nations. After World War II, the United States codified the United Nations, because Europe can't get their shit together. And out of World War III, what world will we create, knowing that we have so much interconnectivity, that it's not just the people at the top with power, but we the people can help create this new world order. That's what Alex Jones and Co. won't tell you, is that this is the greatest opportunity of a lifetime, and we should not run from it. We the people have the opportunity to create and co-create and participate in carefully cultivating this new world order that everyone fears. We don't have to fear it, because when we understand that our power as a collective puts those in power in the ultimate fear, all we have to do is get online and put enough pressure on our leadership to say, this is what we want the new world order to be, because we are sick of your shit. Absolutely. Just want to let you guys know, I'm starting a Women of War Wednesdays podcast. So happy Women's History Month to all the ladies out there. It's not going to be a different podcast. It's just going to be another episode series within the Awakened Demagogue podcast. Going to focus on various amazing stories of women and how we have contributed to war efforts, whether it's Fidel Castro's mistress being used as a CIA asset, or Joan of Arc even. Women of War Wednesdays, okay? Because women are powerful, women are awesome, and whether you guys know it or not, women are taking the lead on what's going on right here, right now, in this moment around the world with this Ukrainian situation. So, until next time, guys, deuce.